You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Vegetation Removal Prevention Act before the lame duck session of the state legislature would stop cities from prohibiting or restricting removal of trees or other vegetation in non-residential areas. In other words, if a commercial property owner wanted to clear-cut all the trees on that property, the local government could not stop it if this bill passes. Many local governments have ordinances restricting tree removal because of the many benefits to a community. Lee Mueller is a certified arborist with the Davie Resource Group. This company advises cities and companies across the nation on tree management issues. Lester Graham with Stateside and the Environment Report caught up with Mueller in Grand Rapids and asked him why cities pass ordinances to protect certain tree species.
In urban forestry, it's well established in the peer-reviewed literature that trees offer a wide range of benefits. Trees help capture stormwater, they sequester carbon, they improve air quality, and trees actually improve property value. So some communities may look at trees that, whether they're on public or private property, that those trees offer public benefits. Whether, you know, you have a tree on your private property, that tree is going to sequester carbon, it's going to capture stormwater, it's going to improve not only your property value, but also your neighbor's property value. So a number of communities have decided that regulation of those trees and how those trees are removed or retained is important to maintaining not only the community character, but potentially also the community's stormwater management goals, maybe air quality goals, a number of variety of objectives.
Well, I want to get a specific example here. So let's say I've got 10 acres of trees. I want to cut them down so I can have a parking lot there, and it happens to be in a watershed. Well, they're always in a watershed someplace, right? And that slows the rain, right? That canopy might be home to wildlife. That canopy also, depending on where it is in the city, might have some small factor in the heat island effect of a city. Those are all really kind of hard things to quantify. So how does a city enforce that with fines?
Frankly, through the iTree suite of software, they actually can be quantified. Not a lot of communities go that extra effort on a property by property basis, and there are also models, so there may be errors. But generally, these ordinances often restrict the removal of trees when it comes to development purposes. So when a land use development or a site permit is pulled for development, that's usually when this kicks in. And it's often to prevent the wholesale clearing of trees. A few communities in Michigan just restrict tree removal regardless of whether or not a permit for land development is pulled. By and large, these are restricted to a certain size of tree and sometimes species classifications of trees. So if you're going to remove a tree over, say, 6 inches or 8 inches in some communities, you may have to either replant or pay a fee to cover what you're not replanting.
Some of these trees are seen as, the bigger trees are seen as historic in some way, and they have greater value. And I'm wondering, how do you determine whether a tree is by its size, or in what way do you say this tree is special and it has special protections?
Yeah, again, I think there's a variety of ways these ordinances are written. And some of them simply just say all trees over 8 inches are protected, or all trees over 10 inches are protected. Other ones may add another class for landmark, heritage, or legacy tree, in which they say trees over a certain size are deserving of more protection, or require more replanting, or may require higher fees. Usually that's just determined by what is so some communities look at it in terms of they have different species with different sizes. Some of them just say all trees over 30 inches. And it's largely recognizing that trees of greater size take longer to grow, take longer to get there, are more fragile, and often actually provide outsized benefits as well. They're usually producing the greatest amount of stormwater capture, the greatest amount of air quality improvement, the greatest amount of property value enhancement. And so they've taken a position that maybe those trees are deserving of greater protection.
Senator Tom Casperson, who's the sponsor of this bill, has said that, look, cities have to back down a little bit because you're infringing on private property rights. Now, you've helped write some of these ordinances. What kind of debate goes on when you are trying to find that balance between community good and private property rights?
Those conversations and decisions are often made by local communities. When I'm asked to help write these ordinances, I'm, you know, a consultant that assists, and I don't make decisions for communities.
Right.
So usually those conversations are balanced by, you know, what have already been decided our community objectives through master land use plans, through urban forest plans, sustainability plans, what have you. And that's usually what frames those ordinances.
So there's well-researched data behind a lot of these ordinances and these decisions.
These ordinances are not outliers. You can find them across Michigan. You can find them across Illinois. You can find them across Ohio. This is a common tool that urban foresters and communities use to influence how trees are treated on private property. Again, primarily during development activities, but sometimes just wholesale as well. Largely connected to a recognition that trees provide a lot of public benefit. And without those trees, communities would face additional fees, for example, in creating stormwater infrastructure. Communities may face lower property values because the aesthetics of their communities change significantly. So these ordinances are not as uncommon as you might think. They can be well-written or they can be poorly written. And it's important when communities look at these ordinances to take into account the balance between the private property rights and what the community goals are and how best to accomplish those.
So reportedly, the event that prompted this bill was a trucking firm in Canton, which cleared off about 16 acres to make room for more parking space for trucks. How often does something like that happen, and then that developer or that private property owner gets surprised with a fine they did not see coming?
I'm not sure I can. I'm not familiar enough with Canton to really comment.
Well, I mean, any city, though. I mean, how often does that happen in the state?
It's a little outside my area of expertise.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
I'm usually involved in the writing, not necessarily the
enforcement.
Back end.
Right. Yeah. So if cities lose this ability to restrict this kind of tree removal, what's the worst case scenario?
So we at Davie Resource Group have done a number of urban tree canopy assessments across the country. And in some of these communities, we actually look at trends in tree canopy over time. Invariably, most of these communities see canopy loss. They're losing trees. Even in some of these communities when there's aggressive plans to try to increase tree canopy cover through tree planting, outreach programs, and ordinances, they still tend to lose trees. If communities don't have a full suite of tools available to them to try to encourage tree retention, tree planting, tree preservation, we're looking at a situation where we may be losing tree cover in a lot of our communities, where we may be losing a lot of those benefits such as stormwater management, carbon sequestration, air quality, property values, as trees disappear from those communities.
Lee Mueller is with Davie Resource Group. He's an urban forester. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.